You're listening to the Black British Parent Podcast, having conversations, sharing experiences, and supporting the Black British Parent community with your host, Deborah Field Pelly.
Welcome to Black British Parent Podcast, and we have a dear old friend of mine. Can I say that? I'm allowed to say that.
Yeah, of course you can.
who I've known for a little while back, but you know, I've seen some of the works you've been doing, and I thought it was important to have someone like yourself. How would you describe yourself? Because I say like a creative artist, how would you describe yourself?
I'm a visual artist. Visual artist is the main umbrella, which with all my works come underneath. But if you was put it in order, then tattooing is my most frequent medium that I practice. It's my main source of income. Then after that, I would say paintings. So I mainly practice in acrylic ink and acrylic paint that you paint onto a canvas. And then after that, it'll be illustration. So yeah, that's the reason why I say artist, because it's more than just, I'm not just a tattoo artist or I'm not just a painter. I move across different mediums. So I also am the founder of Inqua Tattoos, which has been running now for 10 years. So it's been a journey, and it's also led me to other roads like broadcasting. So yeah. All in all, I am a creative. I fall under the creative banner.
Okay. That sounds amazing. That's really great. I was going to ask you something. It was there and you left, and I just listened to what you're saying. I was going to say that I kind of like, I just wanted to, I never really gave you your flowers at the time when I should have, and I'm going to give them to you now. Like, I really want to say thank you so much for the opportunities. I don't know if I'd include this in the podcast or not. Maybe we'll see. But thank you so much. No, but honestly, because I think when I met you, it was at a time when I was reconsidering my creativity, my doing works, isn't it? And I was very unsure. Do you know what I'm saying? Like my journey through art and being creative, I knew I was to a certain level because of what I was producing. My earliest memories was doing art in school and then going on to do graphic design, which I didn't continue doing, and going on to do fashion design. Like, it was always something in some sort of creative medium, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And then you become a parent and then it's like, you ain't really got time to doodle around. And yeah. That's generally the mindset. And I suppose growing up, it was always that thing of, being a creative, you can't make no money from it. Do you get what I'm saying to you? Like, creatives are always going to be broke and stuff. So I guess you always, I can't say to speak for anyone else, but there's always that thing of being practical and realistic and not being, you know, in a fantasy kind of world. But, you know, when I met you and we you know, was flexing around each other and stuff and sharing time and space, you really encouraged me and helped me to see and push myself as a creative, do you know what I mean? And I always speak fondly of you as a result of that, and I've always been grateful for that. Do you know what I mean? It was just really, other people did try to encourage, but it just wasn't like how you did. And I would imagine that in your tattoo shop, in your creative space, how you are with the people you work with, do you know what I mean? How encouraging. So I always just imagine that, yeah, man, you're in a good space doing great things.
Give thanks. You know, it's funny you say that. I think we showed one another a lot of things during that period. It wasn't just me showing you stuff or me giving you opportunities. I think you showed me a lot of things, even about health, about the way I think, about the way I carry myself with certain things. That time was crazy. I think a lot of us were literally finding ourselves. I look back on how I was operating at that time. And even though I like to think that I'm a very sharing person, I always try to share what I have, because I feel like if I share something with you, then it grows. And then eventually we were able to exchange something and we can pass it on to the next person and the next person, and the next person. And it may not necessarily be that's what I'm going to do for the rest of my life, or I've lost my way here, but it may not necessarily be that that's your thing for life, but that's part of your journey. And it's always an honor to be part of people's journey. That's just what it is for me. And I've always been about sharing. I've always wanted to pass things on or pass them down or move the teachings across, because end of the day, I always think, and I've always been raised in a household where teams are stronger than individuals. And the way you build teams is by sharing and exchanging knowledge, encouraging one another, but also being critical when you're down, or not when you're down, but when you're not performing the way you should perform, or where there may be a gap. So yeah, that mindset for me is the most important thing when it comes to being a creative, is don't let the knowledge die with you. And that's always been, even back in them days when I was still finding myself, I always knew that the knowledge hadn't died with me, because I take it back to anything that I've done, from football to being a lift engineer, which is what I was at the time. Someone had to pass their knowledge on to me. So it's the same practice, continually moving. But yeah, them times there were, they were great. Like, I look back on them a lot of times, you know, like we was tapping at the back of the house and laughing and smoking and joking. It was brilliant. It was a good time, you know. And I'm also thankful that, you know, that we met the way we met, and that you was in my life for that period, because you meet with people and it changes the direction of your, you know, of your journey in one way or another. Like, I never drank sarsaparilla the way I drank sarsaparilla after you spoke to me like that again. Do you know what I mean?
What was that? What, you put too much in there?
I think I put bare sarsaparilla in a cup and you're like, what are you doing, bro?
Fair enough.
Yeah. But I had no idea. Again, I had no idea, you know. Yeah. Like you said, you grow up a certain way within your culture and you do certain things, and you don't know that some of them things are damaging until someone who's been shown something shows you something.
Yeah.
So,
and we're all still learning. I'm still on my journey, and I'm not completely where I should be in the health journey. Let's just put that straight. But yeah, nah, for real. Like, I appreciate that, man. Still, yeah, them days were cool. Still, like, just thinking back on it, still, those days were some amazing moments. And I think for me at that time as well, it was just, I got a tattoo machine in my hand. Like, what the hell am I doing? But again, yeah, it was very encouraging. And I created some great piece of work. You know, I still get people all now still say, Debs, when you tattooing again? I'm like, it's been a while. I can refer you to Inqua. Do you get me?
Well, that's the good thing, is that, you know, you've got the skill. You've got it now. You may not reactivate it or go back into it, but whatever you picked up from that time, you've still got it. And that's the beautiful thing about it. Like, how many things do we try out and they're not, it's not for us. It's just part of life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh no, I think I probably would have stayed at it, to be honest with you. It was something that I felt very deeply connected to at the time. But I think just the space that I was in at the moment, I couldn't, being a mum with such a young child at that time, it was still a lot. And then we moved, you know, from London to where we are now. It was a lot under those circumstances. But yeah, man, I definitely take it as one of the many pegs to my lines of experiences, if that's even a phrase even used. But yeah, and I definitely can say that you being a person to be so open and free and encouraging definitely inspired me in many ways of how I approach people with some of the works that I do, or, you know, when I'm supporting or encouraging people, whatever it is, what interaction, I'm always definitely, I think you're one of those people that cemented that kind of philosophy and way of looking at things. But yeah, man, those days were good times, man. They really were good times. Gosh. But so yes. So what's it like being creative, coming up with, how can I say, that's really a direct question. I suppose in my mind, I'm thinking, how do you transition from doing something like a hobby or something you're interested or passionate about like that, and be able to convert that into like an income and, you know, a stream of income?
I'm still figuring that part out, because obviously when you love something that you practice, then it's a little bit easier to make it a source of income, I think. Anyway, a lot of people say that they find it hard to make money out of their art, but I find it very, very easy. The problem is keeping it constant. Mm. That's the problem, is that if you're not constantly, how would I say, breaking down the information that you take in, and you're taking information from so many different places. So you're taking information from your eyes, your ears, your mouth, like every song you listen to, every meal you taste, or book you read, or even film you watch, it shifts you a little bit. And if you're not mindful of what you're taking in, it affects you and the way that you create. So, for example, having a family, when we were just talking about back in the day, I didn't understand the weight of having a family that lives with you, because at the time I just had my two sons and they spent the majority of the time with their mum. So when we were having conversations and you were telling me stuff, I was a bit like, oh, I don't understand what you're talking about. But lo and behold, here I am in this position. So I understand how everything affects you as a creative. And what has happened is that I began to use my art as therapy, and it got me through a lot of really dark times, like really, really dark times, from problems with my ex, the mother of my children, to personal depression, to a lot of things, finding myself. And I find with art, to be a creative, you have to be honest with yourself. I think that's the first thing, because a lot of people go out and they want to be creative, but they think being creative is creating something that everyone loves. You know, I'm going to do this because it's getting me the likes. I'm going to do that because it's getting me the likes. But really, your art is meant to reflect some kind of inner thinking. And I think when you're honest with yourself and you create things that are truly coming from the inside, like you're not afraid to show the way you're feeling about something or the way you express something, and you're not going to budge on that, I think that alone is it sends out a magnetic field that pulls in the right kind of people. So naturally, your income comes anyway. You don't even have to think about it. And also, what I've noticed as well is that a lot of artists, excuse me, the artists are humans. So they get to a point when they are earning money and they get comfortable, and then they forget their manners. They forget you have to treat people with respect. So also treating people with respect, it opens doors, because when you treat people with respect and you're honest and you're open, they're honest and open, and so you're able to learn more, and then you get better information, and then your whole creative process it changes and it transforms. So art really is about, or being a creative, it really is about cultivating the mind and cultivating the life experience in order to get the result. It's very much like farming.
I can see where you're going with that. Definitely. It's definitely what you put in, this, the seeds you sow and how you cultivate and nurture and give it some time, and also accept that some crops aren't going to grow, turn out well, and being okay with that, you know, and learning as you grow. So definitely I can identify with that. So you said that art was therapy for you. How did you come to that conclusion? How did you find yourself to see that? Because there is obviously such things as art therapy, and people specifically go to that. Mm. Do you know what I mean? And obviously there's a lot of creatives that find that to be the case. But for you, how did you come to find that for yourself?
I think I found it when there was no specific point, but it was when you're creating, and you're in creating mode, you're just, your head's down, you're working, you might post a few things, but you're just working. So you're not even taking the time to look at your own work. It's only when you reach a point when you might feel a bit burnt out or you want to just take a break, might be a forced break. Because sometimes when you're working, you've got family, you find you're neglecting your family. And if you've got an honest partner, your honest partner will tell you that you're neglecting your family. Yeah. So it's only when you stop and you look at things. So I had a period when I was able to stop and I was able to look at my art, and then people started asking me questions about my art. Then I'd explain to them what it meant. But at the time, I was just painting. I was just getting it out, just throwing it out on the canvas. But when I was explaining what it meant, I realized, oh my God, this is all based on information that I've taken in, or a feeling that I felt, or emotion, or an experience, and I was putting it out on paper. And that's when I realized that my art is really and truly is my therapy, because it's reflecting how I'm feeling at the time. And everything, like I said, you get a lot of artists, and I speak a lot from experience. So I've had that period when I've just wanted to put stuff out for people to like it, and it never worked. It never, ever, not for me. I mean, people liked it, but I felt like I was cheating myself. So once I started just enjoying the art, I think you can see it.
You can see it. Do you find that now with how art has, because art has, the way art is being managed, can I even say that, is very different to how it used to be, and how it's, I guess in all mediums of art, even with music, like social media has totally put a different spin on the way it's being consumed, I suppose. So over time, I don't know if you notice much, but have you seen how creativity has been like merged into one look or one way, or do you see more opportunities for people to be very unique in their style, you know, of art and what they're producing?
I can definitely see how it's merged into one. Popularity rules, and that's just the way it goes, and the average member of the mass will always do what they feel will bring them the attention that they want. And I've seen a lot of talented artists, not necessarily abstract, but people who can draw from imagination, completely flip and go into a direction that is popular, that will get them finance. And I understand, because at the end of the day, everybody's got to pay their bills. But I think what social media has done is, and I always say on my show, social media is a personal propaganda machine. So it's given everybody this almost like a screen over actual reality. So they can project a whole nother person out into the world. And I think what that's done to the creative is it's flipped them into less of, because doing a painting is no different than doing a song. So you might get a Bob Marley song that hits you like a train, but you might also get a painting that hits you like a train. But what's true about that painting and that song is that the artist has been true to themselves. But when you're worried about being cancelled or or not getting the likes or whatever the reason is, you will always go in a direction that makes you popular.
Yeah, more favorable. Yeah,
more favorable. Yeah,
and palatable.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Because more time than not, when people are flicking through their Instagram, they don't want to think about anything. They want to just recognize it, move on. Recognize it, move on. So whatever's in fashion, it's instantly recognizable. So you go with that because it gets you the likes instantly. So people are doing their reels the same, or they're doing their posts the same, or they're doing their stories the same, or they're all using the same app to create something. So I think the room for uniqueness is actually larger than it seems, because everybody's trying to be the same, which moves everybody into one lane, which means the room to be unique is just massive.
Yeah, there's more room and opportunity. I hear that. That's interesting. Yeah. So how would you describe your, I guess, the kind of art that you create?
Do you know what? I've never thought about that. I've actually never thought about how I'd describe it.
Has anyone ever asked you what kind of art you do?
Yeah, I just say I paint acrylics, or I paint.
And what do you paint?
I paint different subjects. So right now, if you go back 4 or 5 years ago, I would say my art was very in the chrysalis stage. So I was coming out of a dark place. So a lot of my paintings were about being lifted out of depression. And about 4 or 5 years ago, maybe 6, I've lost count, is probably when I started turning towards Rastafari, which is when I started looking further into myself and into things. And it made me, it lifted a weight off my shoulders. And with that weight being lifted off my shoulders, my paintings completely changed. And it went through a period when it was very much like I felt not resentment or anger, but just like I can't put my finger on the emotion, but it was like a pulsing emotion. So every painting I put out was like a new pulse. And it was very brutal and very honest. Like I did a painting called Put It In A Book.
I saw that one. It's very nice.
Yeah. And another one called Willie Lynch's Dream. A lot of the paintings were based on the information that I was taking in, and it was very, every painting was but then once I became a bit more comfortable with myself, the paintings changed and they became more peaceful. So now I paint mainly from a place of peace, because I feel that most of the time that's where I am, or I try to be anyway, because I found living in London my whole life is that things change on a whim. They change instantly. So to be stressed all the time is not a good place to be. It's not a good place to be at all. So yeah. Like I said, going back to what I was saying, the painting, the style always changes. So it's hard to put a finger on what I would class it as. Because right now I'm painting houses and trees and, you know what I mean? Characters sitting on massive pumpkins. And I'm just painting all kinds of crazy things, but they are all different facets of my life that I'm going through, you know, like a lot of the drawings and paintings I'll do of one of my characters in the garden is based on one part of my life. And then I'm doing a lot of family portraits now, because I've seen a lot of different families and different types of families, and seen the life that they live and how they express their love for one another. And it's so inspiring to see that how could I not paint or draw or depict it? You know, so now I literally try my best to enjoy everything and then make it all come together as one. So to have a style of my own, to name my style, I can't, because there's no box.
Yeah, it's just, okay, yeah. How you feel, and it's just in units. I can see that. Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, so what is it like being a creative and a dad?
Oh, man.
How do you manage? Because I struggled with that, to be honest with you. It was really hard for me being a mum. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't
want
to get into that kind of cliche stuff, but what's it like being a very active and involved dad and a creative?
It's wonderful. It really is. But I think, to be honest, I have to be very thankful, because my wife takes on a large load of the children. And I think when it comes to being a creative, being a man, being a male creative and being a female creative is two completely different, because the lifestyle is different.
It depends on the people though as well. I agree with you, because that's what it was like for me. But there's some other women out there who are mums, and they're able to still, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And
yeah,
when that happens, I am inspired, like fully inspired, because how I have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning now. I don't have to. I choose to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning now to steal an hour just so I can paint in peace. And it doesn't always work out that way, because sometimes I hear you creeping down the stairs. Gosh. And they want to come out and, oh, can I play games while Ema's sleeping or whatever it may be. But to be a dad and a creative at the same time is wonderful. If it doesn't change your art, then there's something wrong with you. You know, because being a father is what is the greatest gift that I think I've ever received. You know, I didn't realize it when I was a father to the first two. I was very, very young. And when you're very, very young, you're very, very selfish and you act in certain ways that aren't really conducive to anyone. But now as an older man, being a father, I realize the gift that it is, because everything you do, or maybe not everything you do, but a lot of what you do, your children pick up. You know, and I didn't know that when I was younger with my first two. For me back then, everything was PlayStation and takeaway. But nowadays, like I said, I try to do things that my children see. So I like to see them. I like them to see me read. I like them to see me paint. So when they get up in the morning, they're coming down to have breakfast, I'm sitting at my desk painting, or I'm sitting in the chair reading. So I try to give them a visual of that. It's not just about one thing. And what they give me in return is that sense of wonder. You know, when I read them Anansi stories, or I read them African folklore, or even Jewish folklore, or whatever folklore it is that we get our hands on, if I'm reading it to them, their way of interpreting it, and then they share it with me, and I didn't think about it like that. So it's a whole new realm. And as well, I go back and I watch things that I used to watch as a child with my children, and sharing that with them, and it takes me back to a place. So again, my art is taken to a whole nother place, because it's stuff from the 70s and 80s, and to them that's like watching stuff from the 40s. So yeah. It's absolutely amazing, you know. And they always want to share in the things that you do, so it gives you an opportunity to relearn some of the things that you may have forgotten. So it keeps you fresh as well. If you're really paying attention to being a father and being a creative, it keeps you fresh, and it always gives you fresh ideas.
Yeah, children are definitely a blessing and a source of inspiration. At least they should be, and that's what, to me, what they are. Do you know what I mean? As much as they are their own person, their own people, they're very inspiring. Their curiosity and inquisitiveness, and like you said, their awe and wonder at the world around them, is definitely beautiful to experience. And to also remember that once upon a time we was like that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Once upon a time. So do your children, are your children drawing and are into art, and how is that going on with them? Is any of them like might be willing to take on the family business or at some stage?
The influence has spread, you know. My niece is into art. She's really good. Yeah, she showed me she's doing a mural on a wall in her bedroom. She showed it to me, and I was like, bro, I know adult artists that can't get bodies into this shape. Like some of the actual contortion she was getting the character on her wall in, I couldn't do it until I was a certain age. She's 15.
Wow.
Which was absolutely amazing to see. My daughter just fills up sketchbooks. In days, which is good to see. My son is very musical. I think he's picked up his mother's side of the gene pool. So he's very musical. We do African drumming as well. So he wants to be top of the class. He wants to be the best he can be every time he goes. You know, kids at like 7, they want to show everything off. So he's very showy-offy at the moment with it, and he's enjoying it. And I'm happy he's enjoying it. And it's just good to see him express himself in that way. My older two, he's more into the oldest one is more into gardening. So if I take him to the allotment, he's over the moon. And the younger one just likes to build stuff. So he's creative in a building kind of way. So if I could see him going maybe into even into the building trade, and that's a creation, that's a creative art form in itself, you know, to get certain things to fit and work and operate. That's a great form of creation that is very much taken for granted. So
isn't it interesting that being, ain't it a beautiful thing being able to allow your children the opportunity to explore and express themselves, and you be able to observe from, you know, from the parental space and be able to then use their interests to guide them perhaps or encourage them into what potentially is a career for them. Potentially, I say career is a big word, but whichever avenue that they choose to go in. I mean, it's just beautiful to hear you say that, you know, because again, I've been home edding for donkey's years, for how long?
Yeah.
And that's always been the thing that I always talk to parents about when they ask me, you know, how do you do it? And to hear you, I don't want to, like, in terms of compare parenting and stuff like that, but it's beautiful when I get to hear parents speak from the space that you're speaking from, in terms of paying attention, observing and tapping into your children's natural abilities and interests. I think that's amazing.
No, it is, because I think I learned a lot during lockdown when it came, we had to homeschool the children. And in a way, I've always been intrigued by homeschooling. And when I can't figure something out, I always try to find a way to make it, or try to find some kind of football analogy. Yeah. I always try to find a football analogy, because when I was playing football, my coach always used to say football is life.
Mm.
And when I was doing the homeschooling with Leo in particular, it was that period when he's just learning his phonics, he's just learning his ABC, he's just learning his this and his that. And in the end, in the beginning, he started showing me what I needed to teach him. It wasn't even forceful. It was like, okay, you don't get this, don't get this. Okay, let's work on this, and then we'll get this. And then once we've got this, we'll do this.
Yeah.
And then at one point, I moved him further ahead in his class. And obviously, the other kids caught up. But it was such a fun experience to go through that. And it showed me just, like, home educators are actual G's. Not all of you, because I know some people say they're educating their kids at home and they're letting them play the PlayStation for hours.
I don't know about that, but yeah.
No, but there are people. No, I know there are. There are, obviously, there's good and bad in everything, right? So, what was we talking about
observing children and finding their interest, but even still, you know, like on a real though, even on a computer game, not that I'm encouraging families to let their children sit in front of computer games for hours, but the world is changing, and the whole digital age and gaming and stuff like that, the things that children can grow up and develop into being and doing as a result of something that people would, what I think rightly is more a hobby than really an addiction. Do you get what I'm saying? I think I've seen and heard some children come up and do some amazing things through gaming on the real though. But yeah, sorry, go ahead. He was about to say, we're talking about observing and tapping into our children's interests.
Yeah, so I just let them try as much things as they possibly can. And I think my wife Tamar is very much into try it. If you don't like it, move on. Yeah. Try it. If you don't like it, move on. If you try something else and you don't like that, you like that less, go back and see if you like this more now.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. She's always encouraging them into extracurricular activities and pushing them to do different things. So I it's a hard one. Like, you know, I found with some of them, because each child is different. I'm gonna say every boy is different, every child is different. If I push some of them in what they're doing, they pull back. And so what I've learned is kind of let them just come to me in their own time and when they're ready to come to me and talk to me about it, then I'll happily sit down with them and discuss what it is that they want to do and where they want to take it.
Was you parented like that at all?
Do you know what? I was. For a period of my life, I was. So my parents got divorced when I was about 13. And from memory to 13, I had that kind of parenting very, very much. So my mum was very much go into this class, go into that activity, try this, try that. Summer holidays, I remember, don't come out the yard until you've written 3 paragraphs about this, that, and the other, or you've read this, that. So my mum was very much like a pushing different forms of information and different forms of creativity. And she nurtured a lot of who I am today, but probably the foundation of who I am today. No doubt whatsoever. So I did get a lot of that parenting, and I think after that period, I had another period of good parenting from my aunts and uncles. So I was quite lucky in terms of the encouraging, but I think the thing that I got from my mum the most is that I do care what people think. Everybody cares what people think to some extent. But I don't care enough, so I'll just go and do it. And I think because I've got that, my children have seen it and then they've picked it up. I definitely got that kind of parenting, definitely.
That's for kids. It's just carrying on and passing on that through the you get me through the lineage.
Yeah.
Gemma,
yeah.
So you being creative, and until the time when I kind of met you, was training me to be a little part-time tattoo artist.
Mm. And I was a part-time tattoo artist as well.
yeah, he was. And then how did the shift from tattooing from your home space to having a full-blown studio, what was that journey like with a family, and pushing the dream? How was that?
It was absolutely mad. It was such a flash. I mean, one minute we was, like you said, we was in the back of the house, and the next thing we've got this space, and I had no idea about anything about, obviously I knew general tattoo procedure, how to keep things clean and so on and so forth, but it was like just the running of a business and managing people. And I think at that time I was living very much in I wouldn't say la la land, but you live the typical artist fantasy that you're an artist, I'm an artist, we think the same, you know, so we're gonna get on. And I took on a lot of people, not realizing that energy really is important. And we would a lot of the times take people on just for their work. So if your work was really good, we would take you on. And then we find out you'd be doing some real horrible, nasty atrocities, like some horrible stuff. And then we get rid of people, and then we take more people on again for their talent, thinking that we can nurture them in something else. And what happens is I started to become grudgeful. You start to become grudgeful when you start to hate the creation that you've made, until eventually you turn around and you say, right, well, again, I looked back to the football analogy. What's the problem here? I keep taking these people on and the same thing keeps happening. I need to look at, it's not the people, it's me. So I started making changes, and I kept the same philosophy, but I protected the philosophy. So I built boundaries around the philosophy. So now if I let you into the boundary, then you have to adhere to the laws within the boundaries of the philosophy. So now we created a team that, no team is perfect and every team argues amongst themselves, but we have a decent understanding of one another because we're from the same culture. So majority of us, no, all of us are African. There's one mixed race you in the shop, but he's African now because he's an African shop. And what that has done for us is that it's allowed us to have some kind of breathing space, because a lot of the times we go into working spaces that aren't for us, they're not built for us. Mm. And that causes tension within us, and then we take that tension home, and then that causes tension within the relationship. So, you know, we spend more time at work than at home, or at least we spend more time awake at work than we do awake at home. So imagine like you're going to work and you're going into a situation and you hate this job and you're traumatized, and you go home and you carry that trauma with you. I did a lot of that for years. I know a lot of people who do that for years. You know, people just complain about it. You're carrying your trauma from work constantly. And that was happening in my own space. So there had to be a change. And what I always believe is everybody's got something to teach you. So every person that passed, good or bad, through them doors, I picked something up from them. I like to think that I'm a critical mind. So being a critical mind, you're going to be a critical person. You have to be able to take criticism. So every person that passed through the doors, good and bad, gave me criticism, and I took it on board, hard as it was to take it from some people, and then learn. And then the business, it starts to operate better and it starts to get good. But that journey from home to studio was a massive learning curve, because you learn how to, I never knew how to manage people, because when you manage people, you manage so many different types of emotions, and every single person is a relationship within itself. So I can't talk to you how I talk to you, because if I talk to you like this, you might burst into tears, but you might want to kick my head off. You get what I'm saying?
That, Pete, that sounds like a lot was happening, bro.
Yeah, it really is a lot. But then again, when I think back to myself in the changing room, all my best coaches were exactly the same. They knew that with certain players, I had to talk to you a certain way to fire you up. And other players, he had to put his arm around them. Like, so to me, he'd be cussing me because he knows that's gonna fire me up. And with certain people in my studio, I will pull them aside and what the rass are you doing? Like, I have to really give them a good rassing, and then they'll fix up. And other people have to take them aside and literally give them 15 minutes, 20 minutes to chat to me, break, have their little breakdown, and then we'll back and forth and reason. So it taught me a lot to manage people and learn people's love language, because everybody speaks a different love language. And a lot of the times that's not taken into account when you're at work. What's not taken into account is people actually have lives, and that affects them and how they work. So the place has taught me that there's always more perspectives than yours. I think that's the biggest thing that I've learned from that place, is that there's always more perspectives than yours. And that once you are able to listen and maybe shift your perspective to see from how the person sees it, then you can see, without being harsh, if they're chatting shit or not.
Yeah, that helps.
Yeah. Yeah. But the transition was a lot. It was a lot, because now it's like I've got to pay rent, and I've got to pay bills, and I've got to pay rates, and you've got to pay all these things. And what I found with a lot of the studios around me that were closing, and the stories that I was hearing, is that this person's a this and that person's a that, and they've treated this person like this, and they've treated this person like that. And what I found is when you treat people good, you get good results. Again, it goes back to that farming mentality. If you cultivate your earth, you'll get good results. If you move your crops about, you get good results. If you treat people right and you allow them the space to breathe, and you pay attention to them, listen to what they're saying, so you can see what's going on in their lives and share what's going on in yours. Not all of it, but share what's going on in yours. A mutual trust is gained, and then you're able to build from there.
Yeah, I think being a creative as well is definitely a space and outlet for not being, you know, overly like emotional how people see it as, but to be at least open and vulnerable to some extent. I guess you have to be in a creative sense, but also create boundaries as well. So in a work setting that's purely based on creativity, that you sound like you managed that well and had a hell of a lot of experiences. Yeah, man, but you pulled through on the other side, didn't it? And you're still here and you're still doing what you're doing. You're not one of those tattoo shops that closed down. Do you know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
man, kudos to you and for doing what you're doing and what you have been doing.
Thanks.
Always inspired and admired you from a distance and where your progress has been going. Yeah, man, love the works. So like, I remember when I started tattooing, my daddy had a lot to say about me tattooing. Do you remember? I was under no pressures. What's that like? I say this is really silly. I think I really need to say it, but like, you know, that concept of marking your skin and the Black community. Like for me, I've always seen it as, I'm not necessarily encouraging and promoting in no way or form for anyone to, you know, mark their skin permanently or anything like that. That's not that. But for me, my understanding, because I've got tattoos, I've done tattooing, as we've shared. I wasn't expecting to share that today, but there you go.
Still need to finish the one in your shoulder.
Yes, I know. I keep thinking, what's going to kill me? I love it, though. I still love it. Still, oh, no, I love it to bits. Anyway, we'll reconvene. What I was going to say is that the concept to me was always about there's some spiritual elements and spiritual aspects to tattooing, and in studies, you know, there was even some healing aspects to it. So what's it like dealing with or being, you know, an African Black tattoo artist sort of studio sort of environment? What's that like with the community?
It's a nice space to be. I think when we dreamed it up, a lot of people couldn't see it. They just couldn't see it. And it was hard to, it's a hard pill to swallow when you're trying to explain something to someone that's not going to work. But I don't think that's necessarily even their thoughts or their thought process. I think that's just what they've been told for so long. But at the time I didn't know that. And I think you just have to continue to work towards where it is that you're doing. Because when you say you're going to do something, and I remember when I was telling people I was going to open a studio when we was back in the house, and I was telling people I'm going to open my own studio. And when you say that to people, they think it's happening tomorrow. They don't see the amount of work that it takes to get the space and the things that you have to do. Like, I had to ring up all kinds of local societies and have conversations with chair people, and it was a joke thing, just to get my little space. But once we got it, I knew that it would transform itself into what it is today. Like, I always had the vision, even where it is today. It's not the vision that I've got for it. It's only part of the vision that I've got for it. But it's understanding that it's a journey, and it's not always, like you said, to be in the space that we're in now is humbling, and it's very, very it's very much an honor, and it's a pleasure as well, because people come in to our studio and they expect, I don't want to say grunge, because I didn't really experience a lot of grungy tattoo studios. I think to me, when people are, you know, you go into a tattoo studio and it's grungy and this and that. And I just think to myself, well, why did you go in there in the first, if you didn't like the look of it, why did you go in there in the first place? I don't go to random cafes that look like nobody but a certain set of people go in there.
I hear you, but nah, but come on now. With most average tattoo shops, I haven't really ever come across one that looks like yours. Most of them do have that kind of description in terms of aesthetically. They mostly do.
Yeah.
I guess in many ways, no disrespect, because I've gone to other tattoo shops and most of them been like European or English owned, for example, right? And there is a moment of, I think I've ever felt the most comfortable in your space at home and in your studio. Do you know what I'm saying to you?
Yeah.
In the other spaces, they've been welcoming, they've been friendly, but I don't know if there's still something that I guess for me, having tattoos is again, like I said, it's a vulnerable sort of spiritual, like interpersonal, like all my tattoos mean something to me. Do you get what I'm saying? So it means even more to me when I have someone who kind of not just only respects the art and respects the concept of what I'm doing, but they respect, I suppose, the energy and the vibe and the spiritual aspects. Without even having to go into conversation with it, you could always sense that.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's easier to deal with people who reflect you.
Yeah, 100%.
I think that's absolutely just a plain fact, you know. And I don't think there's a lot of stuff that goes around on the internet about white people not catering for black people. And when have they ever? Plain and simple. They never have. And it's natural for people to cater to their own culture.
Mm.
Why would you change to appease someone else? That's what we need to get a hold of. And that was always my ethos when it came to the studio, is that I just wanted a space where people from all walks of life, and we get all walks of life. Sometimes all three, four different walks. You might have a roadman and a multi-millionaire tech guy and then a lawyer all in the three chairs at the same time. And we're all busting jokes. So it's I always wanted a space of connection. And for me, it was built around the atmosphere of a barbershop or a hairdresser. Do you know what I mean? Because when you go into a African barbershop or a hairdresser's, it's the same thing. All walks of life come in and they all reason and they all come out and they learn something. And that's exactly what I wanted from us. That was the core thing. Probably more important to me at the time than the tattooing is that experience. So that I think that alone is what separated Inqua Tattoos from the other spaces.
Are there any other black tattoo studios like that?
Yeah, there's loads. There's loads now.
I don't know.
No, there's loads.
I'm a bit biased.
I'll take the bias though. But what I will say, and I'll say it proudly and with no apology, is that we are the trendsetters in the industry, and we have always been. We're not the most popular, but our name is known around London, and that was the thing that I wanted for the brand, is that okay, there is a space where we can go and sit and get some work done. And people sometimes sit for a good hour after they've finished their tattoo just chilling, and that's exactly what I wanted, is that space. So to be honest, I think it was a question, what separates us? Or am I just going off on my own tangent?
That's okay, it's allowed.
I think what separates us from most studios is just that we had the ethos and the vibe from the home. So we just took the same, like I said, that barbershop vibe, and then we just put it in the home. You know, I remember people used to come around, and they come around with three, four of their brethren, and they'd be sitting on the sofa, laughing and joking, the friends getting tattooed, blah blah blah. Yeah, I mean, it's not as, we're a bit more disciplined than that now. We can't have, because we've got three chairs.
Well, yeah, three chairs, good.
We can't have everybody coming up with four people, but it's the same thing, you know. People come and they might come with their mum, or they might come and a friend might come and meet them, and then we chat, and then it's just calm. You know, it's just a calm space. Like you come in and you might hear Beres Hammond, or you might hear Sir, or you might hear D'Angelo, or you might hear Fela Kuti. You don't know what you're going to get. It's just such a, like a, there's always a good vibe and good music. And even if it's silent, it's still calming.
Definitely. Rob, man, thank you so much for joining us. I hope to have you come join us back again. We can talk about other things, but it's just lovely to have you share with us your journey through being a creative, and again, turning that into, you know, a business, a sustainable one that's been around for what you said, 10 years.
The studio has been around for 8, but the company's been around for 10. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. And what that's like for a parent, because what that shows me that families can create businesses out of their passions. Do you know what I mean? You're a clear example and a model for that. So guys, please, I was going to say, guys, go and check out Inqua, but can you let people know where you're at and your socials, how they can follow you and stuff?
Okay, so you can find us on Instagram, Inqua Tattoos. That's InquaTattoos. Hope I spelled that right. For all these years, I know. You can also find us at inquatattoos.co.uk. Also, we need to have a continuation of this on radiotherapy. You need to come over to radiotherapy.
Yeah, I'm welcome.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, check us out. You can check out our podcast. You can check out the projects that we have. We have African Drumming, usually monthly. And we have a few other things, but they're back in the pipeline now because we tried doing them and they didn't work, but they're going back in the pipeline. Yeah.
Put some good energies in this space. So if you had one message to leave with for our Black British parents, what would you like to leave with us with?
Ooh, one message.
Or aim at
couple messages? No, I think one is enough. Just take your time. Take your time. I think a lot of times I find that I feel like time's moving so fast. I've got so much things to do. But you get more done when you focus on one thing at a time. And a lot of the times when I'm with my children, I feel conflicted. Like I should be working, but I should be working. I should be spending time with the kids. If I'm with the children, I try now to just be with the children, and that's that time. And yeah. And then if it runs over, it runs over. If it doesn't, it does. Just take your time with everything, because progress is a slow process. All in all.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Rob. Look forward to
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
That's this week's episode of the Black British Parent Podcast. Be sure to go to blackbritishparent.co.uk to join the conversation. Thanks for listening. Until the next time.